Hi everyone and welcome to the Curve Mindset Podcast. I'm your host and co-founder, Lonnie McGinley. Today we're joined by Simon Austin. How are you, Simon?
I'm very good, thanks, Laurie. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Could you just tell the listeners a wee bit of background about yourself?
Yep, sure. So I've been a journalist for about 20 years now. I was at the BBC for 13 years, left in 2013. Then freelance for a bit for national newspapers. And then I set up the Training Ground Guru website last February. So it's been going a little bit less than 2 years.
Brilliant. And you said you worked for the BBC. How did you get involved in all that? Because it's such a huge industry. But could you just tell us how you get involved in that? And also the kind of mindset, working the kind of day-to-day with that kind of, the pressures of working in the sports kind of industry?
Yeah. So my background, I actually did a law degree to start with. Then I converted to journalism and worked for my local newspaper in Banbury. And then I saw a job advert for the BBC Sport website, which was very new at that time, really, the internet and sport websites. It was 2000.
Yeah.
So I went along, I got a job through that, kind of the lowest level, and then worked my way through the ranks a bit. And a great thing about the BBC is you can actually move around a lot of different areas. So I worked in online, TV, on, Match of the Day, Football Focus, Radio 5 Live. So got a lot of experience, a lot of skills, I think. And it's really good, and that's stood me in good stead for what I've done since.
Yeah, and what was your favourite part of working for the BBC?
I would say anything to do with journalism, really. So I've always loved just finding out information and insights. And it's the same with the site now. I just love to get insights from real experts and people at the cutting edge. And that's what I loved at the BBC. It didn't matter if it was radio, TV, online. But as long as you're getting that genuine insight from people and finding out quality information. As I say, that kind of span the platforms and the mediums, really. But that was the key thing.
Yeah, and your mindset, because it is a high-pressure job sometimes because some things go wrong. How do you kind of deal with the kind of pressures? And did you have like a way of organising things to make sure everything kind of went smoothly?
I suppose experience helps you a little bit, really.
Yeah.
And it can be something you thrive on, really, that pressure, because it's when you really concentrate, when you really go into a zone, you kind of shut out all the peripheral things and you just really focus on what you're doing. It's amazing how it works out a lot of the time when you're under that pressure. I suppose you have occasions when it can go wrong, especially early on when you haven't got the experience or when you panic a little bit, maybe. And then over time, you kind of overcome that with experience, I think.
Yeah, and did you have a kind of mentor to help you with that, or did you kind of do a lot on your own? Because I know mentorship's a huge, thing in the sporting world, but also in life. And I'm wondering, as a kind of young journalist, how did you kind of, as you said, experience, but you have to surround yourself with experience sometimes. Do you kind of think that's the kind of key aspects when it comes to like journalism, having that mentor to try and help you out to kind of that next level?
Yeah, I'd say it was probably a bit more informal for me, really. So I think it's a case of seeing people who you think do things really well and observing them, speaking to them a little bit, hopefully, and then trying to pick up a bit of what they do and adopt it yourself. I did work with quite a few really good people, and often people have got different strengths, haven't they, really? So you try and pick a bit from each person, really.
Yeah, and what was the kind of one of the most inspiring kind of stories? It doesn't have to be a sports, but it could be something that's kind of got, I'm actually... My mindset is, it could be something from a fix to a growth or something that's just inspired you to kind of keep on going.
Yeah, I can remember probably a few different ones, really, at the BBC. Like, I remember when I just started working in TV, which is quite, I'd been on newspapers before, so it was very different. And I remember I worked at Wimbledon, and I got chosen to do one of the pieces with Roger Federer, who was in the final.
Yeah.
So every year they'll do a big piece, which they'll throw a bit of budget out and a bit of resource with each of the finalists.
Yeah.
And it'll run for maybe like 5 minutes. So, and you're expected to think laterally and creatively and come up with something different. And you actually edit it through the night. So on the Saturday before the men's final, you edit it all night. And that was a lot of pressure, really, to come up with an original idea and then execute it. You know, and you feel like the world's watching, really, because that is a big showpiece, and all your colleagues as well are watching.
Yes.
So, yeah, I remember that. And it actually, it did come off really well in the end. And people helped me with it as well. You know, you get given good ideas by people and more experienced people. And then I was proud with the final effort as well. But you have that kind of, again, that panic at the start, really, of, you know, what the hell am I going to do? It's too much for me. And you feel a bit overwhelmed.
Yeah, definitely. Did you interview Roger Federer then? Was he a really nice person to talk to? Because he seems across, you know, on the TV, seems a genuine nice guy, you know, and then the hard working behind the scenes.
Well, no, it was actually a guy called Phil Jones who interviewed him, and then I was the producer. So I was the one who had to come up with the concept and how I wanted it to look, what the content would be. All the logistics of it, organising the cameraman, the sound, the interviewer. But it was actually Phil who did the interview, who's very good. I don't know if you know him.
Oh, yeah. And I just, as you said, you said there, you know, at the start, you kind of might panic a little bit just at the end. Do you think standards are a big thing, you know, in football, but also in sport and in journalism? Because everyone's got an opinion these days on, you know, different ideas. But, you know, standards is such a... you know, such a thriving, you know, thing in the kind of world we live in. So do you keep your standards high so the stories are kind of that bit better than everyone else? Or do you want to just be that kind of the best you can be by having the higher standards?
No, standards are massively important, definitely. And that's a big thing, I think, coming back to something you said earlier, but who you surround yourself with and who you look up to. And, yeah, you should always... have the highest standards, really. I think for yourself, but also for your profession, you know. It's like training ground guru. I want the stories to be, you know, up there with the best around, really, in terms of the journalism. I always want it to be original. So, I'll always interview the people, hopefully get the best people I can, source it myself, write it as well as I can. Standards are massively important. And there's actually someone I work with, I don't know if you know him again, but Dan Rowan, who's the sports editor at the BBC, and I work quite closely with him, and he has massively high standards. You know, you might have a period, because I worked as his producer for a bit, you might have a period when you're feeling tired and you might slack a little bit on something, but he'll always demand the highest standards of everyone and of himself all the time, you know. So it might be 11 at night and you've already filmed something and you just want to go home, but he will want it to be as good as it can be. And if it isn't, he'll say, right, we're going to go and do that again, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good, not to settle for mediocrity or second best.
Yeah, it's like a leadership, you know, because a lot of leaders have different kind of, you know, because there's the authority and the sort of authority side to the kind of people who just don't want to have that kind of challenge, but you have to challenge yourself, you know, because, you know, it could be 11 o'clock, it could be 12 o'clock, but as you said, the standard has to be there just to make sure that, you know, everyone, that's the respect, you know, of your kind of fellow colleagues, but also the respect of, like, different people who are going to, you know, judge you on the work you do.
Yeah, definitely. Because it's easy, isn't it, if you are tired and you want to go home or you've had enough, you know, it is easy to settle for second best, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So it's quite a massive thing to push yourself all the time. And you see that in sport, again, I think. Because I did a piece on the Marines and the All Blacks. And they have this similar theory, really, that every detail's got to be as good as it can be. So, like, the Marines, I remember I was talking to a guy called JJ Chalmers, and he was talking about when he had to clean a toaster out, you know, and you've got to get it as clean as you can because every little detail counts. And if you're slacking on the small details, the chances are you'll slack on the big things as well, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like the All Blacks with cleaning the, what do they call it, clearing the sheds and cleaning the changing rooms after a game, you know. Standards.
Yeah, because that came from, obviously, The Legacy by James Kerr, you know, and it's like one of the best books you're going to read. But it's all about, you know, it's that inspiration to try and, you know, don't be second best, you know. You, I always remember, you know, one of my friends and mentors, Alistair McCaw, and he always says, talent obviously gets you, you know, through the door, but it's your attitude that kind of stays there. And it's the, you know, that was from like the Man City, the director, you know, and it was all about how do you, you know, because I know for the world we live in, it's such a multi-billion dollar industry, you know, with football and soccer and every other kind of sport in the world. And it's, you know, there's an ego side of it, but also there's a standard side of it. And you see the Pep thing, you know, even yesterday, you know, the Raheem Sterling, you know, the showing off a little bit, and he just said, but he still had that embrace of the hug, you know, that you do really well, but don't take the mick because it's still a respect thing, you know. And it just shows you the, you know, the class of people, you know. Obviously, you've worked, you know, in sport for a kind of number of years, but you have to, I've dealt with kind of some challenges, you know, with maybe some, you know, I don't want to say clubs, that some people might have kind of give you, kind of don't give you as much. How do you kind of deal with, you know, that kind of side? Do you have to push them to get more out of them, or do you sometimes think, you know what, this might not be the best fit, but I'm going to try my best to try and get the best out of them with different questions and different kind of techniques?
So do you mean getting in the first place, getting access in the first place? Yeah. I wouldn't claim to be sort of perfect at this again, but I think you just try and conduct yourself professionally in what you do and the way you approach someone. I think you've got to be persistent and also confident in what you do, you know, and, you know, to get across how good your platform is and why they should be a part of that, really. And the persistence, you know, you're very good at that yourself, I know, from getting me on this. So I think it's a combination. I guess if you do just the door shut in your face continually, then, you know, you probably do reach a point where you have to walk away, but you want to keep knocking for as long as you can, definitely.
Yeah, because I know that from, obviously, previous experience, you know, like a number of clubs you email and they get back to you and say, oh, sorry, you're just not ready, or you won't get in and all that. But I'll just be saying, okay, no worries. I'll maybe in about 6 months' time, you know, I'll come up with a document or something that maybe, you know, people might like or something. You've obviously, I've said you worked in sport for many years. Who inspires you, or who do you think
I've been lucky to meet quite a few people through the site, actually, who I've found very inspirational, for starters. So, you know, I had an event in June and Tony Strudwick was a volunteer to be a speaker at that. Very, very good, you know, massive experience. I think he was at Man United 11 years with Sir Alex Ferguson for a lot of that, winning a lot of trophies, but a very humble guy who still listens. Who wants to help the industry as well. And, you know, he's helped me without anything in return, really.
Yeah.
So he's one person. Brian Ashton, who, again, he was at my last event and he'll be at this one as well. And just a massive amount of knowledge and expertise in leadership, yeah. I think, coaching. And someone came up with a great quote, actually, about him, who I spoke to. It was Ian Jones from Burnley. And he was saying Brian is a 72-year-old, but he's still got the mind and the openness of a university student.
Yeah.
Which I think is brilliant. You know, he's still open to ideas and humble and creative, you know, even at that age at 72, which is superb.
Yeah, because I remember. On you go, sorry.
Oh, no, sorry. And then just people in journalism as well, who I would say are people I look up to, definitely. So David Walsh on the Sunday Times, who's the chief sports writer, who I don't know if you know about his story, but he pursued Lance Armstrong for a long time because he had suspicions about doping. And, you know, he had to go through a lot of hardship, really. No one else was backing him. He got sued and lost, even though he was telling the truth because of our libel laws in this country. Yeah. I think he could have lost his house, you know, but he carried on. And he was vindicated in the end. And I just think as well, he's very measured, which you don't see a lot with media now. It can be very kind of short term and sensationalist and bombastic. But he's always very measured and thoughtful and quite a wise man, I think, really, which is something we definitely need. So, yeah, he's someone I've always looked up to, without a doubt.
Yeah. And as you said earlier on, you know, Brian Ashton, 72, you know, always...
Yeah.
I always remember the quote Sir Alex Ferguson said, "Every day is a school day," you know, and that's the kind of,
yeah.
You know, it just shows you the, you know, the next generation of coaches. You know, you Pep Guardiola is unbelievable. You know, he's probably arguably the best coach in the world at the moment. But it's just a bit humbleness, you know what I mean? But a bit, but he has such a support network. You know, like you've seen the documentary was very good, but I like the All or Nothing, the All Blacks one, that was excellent too. But that just shows you the. You know, they both, it's all about teamwork, you know, and just, I think that's such a key aspect in, you know, in journalism, but in football too. You made the transition from, you know, the BBC to freelance. Was that a bit of a gamble, or did you have everything in place and like the support, you know, from like maybe family and all that? Because sometimes you have to go find something else in the maybe the similar industry, but it's going to propel you to, you know, be better.
Yeah, well, to answer that, it was a gamble, definitely, and I didn't have everything in place, really. I had a few contacts and a few ideas. But it's always a tricky one, that, really, isn't it? Because I wonder sometimes if you wait for everything to be in place, will you be waiting forever, you know? And I think I've used an analogy where, like, if you're at the edge of a cliff, maybe... You know, sometimes you got to jump, haven't you, really, and see what happened. Hopefully, with your parachute on your back, you know. But so, yeah, you have a good. You don't want to totally jump into the unknown. You want to do as much preparation as you can, but ultimately, you never quite know, do you? Until you do it. So sometimes you just have got to jump, I think. But it took a while to get everything sorted, really. And as I say, I think it was probably 2-3 years maybe before I started the website, so that's when things have really got going, I think.
Yeah, that kind of leads to the next question. You know, the Training Ground Guru, can you tell the listeners what that is about? You know, because I find it really interesting, you know, the website and the kind of the Twitter and everything, but could you just tell us the kind of idea behind it, but also, you know, what inspired you to, you know, go for it?
Yeah, well, thanks for that, first of all, Laurie. Basically, I just think what goes on the training ground, as you know, is absolutely crucial to how a team performs and what happens in a match. Yep. So I always thought there's crucial insights there in terms of the sports science, the coaching, the tactics, the nutrition, you know, and maybe that wasn't that well represented, really, in the mainstream media, I don't think. And also, I thought they're kind of the unsung heroes, really, behind the scenes. So some of the coaches, the sports scientists, as I say, analysts, you know, the guys you never hear about, really, even though it's really important what they do. So that was the inspiration, definitely. And I thought there was a bit of a niche there in the market because it wasn't getting covered that much. So, yeah, that was the thinking behind it. I didn't quite know how it would go again when I started it. You kind of got a good idea again. It's a bit like leaving the BBC. But ultimately, until you jump, you don't know, really.
Yeah. And what clubs have kind of accommodated you the most? You know, managers, you know, because there's always some clubs will be more accommodating than others. But I'm just wondering if you can name a couple, or even some people who are, you know, helped you out to try and get to that kind of push you needed.
Yeah, so, I mean, I said two of the guys earlier, actually. Tony Strudwick, who was at Man United, now with Wales, has been a big, big help, and someone who's very well respected within the industry. So that gave the site a bit of kudos probably quite quickly, you know, to have someone like that involved. But I think he saw the potential of it and what I was trying to do. Brian Ashton's definitely been another. Someone that I interviewed and hit it off with, and he's been very, very generous. And then you know, a lot of practitioners actually as well, and a, you know, quite a few clubs as well. So I've been to Huddersfield and spent the day there. I've done stuff with Burnley. There's quite a few really. Bournemouth, I interviewed their head of sports science and medicine, Craig Roberts, early on. Did a very in-depth piece with me. You know, guys like Darren Burgess at Arsenal, he helps. It's been really good, really. And I think that the practitioners are very open and keen to discuss what they do. I don't know if you found this, but the problem can just be the sort of media people sometimes who they want to keep that door shut, really. Which is a bit of a shame, I think.
I know, because one of my friends, he made a comment which was quite true. You know, like he said, if he went to any other country in the world, they would open him up, open the keys to the kingdom. But if he went to, you know, a club in England, they would close the door. But then he said, he flipped it around. He said if it was a Spanish person, he wanted to go to any club in Spain, they would lock the door. But if it was any country in the world, they would let him in. And I think it's just, it's a, you know, there's no secrets in football. There potentially could be some. But there's not really any, you know, there's, as they say, it's not reinventing the wheel as such. You know, maybe Guardiola has kind of reinvented some parts of it. You know what I mean? But it's still, you know, you're looking at the Cruyff, you know, you're from, you know, the 70s, 80s, and then obviously in the 90s with, you know, he was at Barcelona. And then, you know, he's created this, you know, way of playing. But then you look at Mourinho, you know, I watched the film, the Graham Hunter film, you know, and it was all about Mourinho was supposed to be the next Barcelona manager Guardiola, but he just changed his ideas completely and went for the physical, the powerful guys instead of the technical guys, and kind of went back on his kind of philosophy, you know. And you know, I know there's a lot of managers want, you know, success right away, which is the kind of way things are happening right now, but you need to give people some time, and if it's working, great. If it's not, then obviously support has to be, you know, in there.
100%, definitely. That's what we don't see a lot really in football, isn't it? People given time.
Yeah,
I think it's been a bit, has there actually been any sacking? I don't think there's been a sacking yet, has there, in the Premier League, which is very unusual. I think I read somewhere it's the first time in quite a while that there hasn't been.
Yeah.
Which is quite encouraging, I think, really.
Yeah, because you see, obviously, Benitez, you know, he was in a shaky peg. Now he's starting to, he's won two games, or two or three games, and now he's mid-table. And it's like, that's the Premier League for you, you know. And it's like, you know, it's just, you know, I liked, I thought Sarri, he's a breath of fresh air in there, but obviously, Klopp is brilliant with his the passion, but also his knowledge is, you know, first class. But you know, you still get the top. It's never a top four anymore. It's a top eight usually. That's the kind of the way. Well, top six. You know, that's the way the kind of the industry's working. You know, because you've wrote a number of articles. Can you tell us the kind of the best one you've wrote and the one that's actually inspired you to kind of maybe do that a little bit more?
God, that's tricky. I mean, to be honest, most of them inspire me, or a lot of them, because I only write about things really that really pique my interest. You know, you might get quite a few that are about appointments or people moving clubs, which are a bit more functional, although they've still got an important purpose, I think. Like I did the one today about Lee Nobes moving from Man City to Liverpool, which has made quite a big impact.
Is that the physio?
Yeah, he's the head physio, yeah. So it's just, I suppose, quite unusual to go from Man City to the title rivals, you know. And not many people leave Man City, do they, really, willingly? So that's made it quite a big one. But God, I think, honestly, every week I find something interesting, really. I think for me, you know, interesting people to talk to. Even like a few weeks ago, I met Gary Bowyer, who was manager of Blackpool and Blackburn. Quite tough jobs, but spent an hour with him. Really interesting, I thought. Yeah, things you read about technology. sports science. Yeah, loads of interesting stuff, really.
Oh, brilliant.
Tricky to think of a number one, I think. I'm trying to think. The most popular story, funnily enough, we've ever done is about the All Blacks and an interview with Gilbert Anoka, if you know him, who's now one of the assistants. He was mental skills coach.
Yeah.
And he talked about the no dickheads rule, if you'll obviously know that from reading Legacy. But that's the most popular piece ever. So.
Oh, no, as I said, we'll get a link to that, you know, through the podcast, you know, it's there for, because a lot of people... are interested in the. I like the, as you said, the people may just want a couple of minutes to read things, you know, and then that could be
something. Yeah.
Or, you know, the one where the people kind of want to know where everyone's moving, so they're thinking maybe I can get a job or something like that, you know.
That's, yeah.
But you know what football's like, it's always in the door for one, and then people get promoted, and you're like, oh, yeah, square one.
Definitely.
Final couple of questions. Where can people find your work? Through your website or Twitter or Facebook, or where can people find it?
Yeah, so I mean, it's the website, first of all, which is trainingground.guru. And then the social media I'm most active on is Twitter. I'm always on there, but maybe a bit too much. But if anyone posts anything there to me, I'll see that pretty quickly. And then there'll be a lot of updates during the day as well, be it stories or things I've seen that are interesting or engaging with people. So that's definitely the main one. And actually LinkedIn quite a bit as well. I've found a really good platform. I don't know if you use that a lot.
Yeah, I think it's excellent because you can start to just put more information out there, you know, because people like to see it's a more professional, you know, you know, instead of aiding your thoughts on Twitter and Facebook, it's good to just have a professional side of it.
Yeah, it's where you get your real sort of hardcore, I think, of people who are normally in the game or really interested in the game. So you get a really good level of debate on there. I mean, Twitter's really good, but it can sometimes descend a little bit, can't it? Especially if you're talking about a club, people get very defensive or can be a bit rude on there, you know. So LinkedIn's good.
Yeah, because there's not any trouble on that. That's all just kind of, you know what, you might be right, you might be wrong, that kind of thing. It's no, you're effing this and effing that, you know. But
yeah.
And the final question is, what does mindset mean to you as a kind of journalist, but also working in the kind of sports industry?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. Very good question. I suppose it's to do with your motivation, what keeps you going, how you deal with setbacks or difficulties, how you keep your discipline, if maybe, like we're talking about social media, if you get abuse or anything, how you respond to that. Even I think on the website, I want to have a culture of, you know, how it is conducted and how it behaves. I think that's all to do with mindset. How you keep going if maybe things aren't quite going your way or getting difficult or you're not having the results you need. How you organise yourself, because that could be tricky. I've spoke a lot about that recently with people, but I don't know if you find this, when you're getting a lot of emails or messages, which that's increasing a lot now for me and for the site, how you manage your time, really, because you can find that when you're on social media or on your emails and messages, you're not actually getting anything done, really, constructively. But then you want to engage with people and not be rude. And
yeah.
So that's a challenge, really, how you do that. And I suppose that comes within mindset as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, thanks for your time, Simon.
Thanks, Laurie.
Thanks for listening. If you don't already, give us a follow on Twitter at The Curve Mindset. And please like and retweet the podcast. And also, if you can, leave us a review on SoundCloud or Anchor. Thanks for all your support.